performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region. Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-332-7372. Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, radio for the imagination. Thanks so much for tuning into the show that celebrates all things creating. And of course, we're going to share some great stories. So let's tune our imaginations together. And today I am going to start off by talking about the state of the city, which was last week, which I hope you have a chance to take a look at that. I encourage you to visit the City of Northfield's website to track down the video and watch this presentation to learn about what's happening in Northfield. I want to send out a big thank you to Mayor Rhonda Pownell and the whole City of Northfield staff that organized the event. And I want to wish a big congratulations to our new living treasure, fabric artist, textile artist Judy Say Willis. It was so fun to see her win the award and to have her be her work presented and for all of us to get to know her a little bit better. And there'll be lots of different interviews that they only showed snippets of in the presentation at State of the City that will be posted on Northfield Public Broadcasting website. And you can find that also through the City of Northfield website. There just are so many reasons to smile and feel positive about the future of Northfield. And there's so much to love about our little town. And at the event, the Northfield Youth Choirs performed this tune, Crowded Table. And I was absolutely moved by this song and so delighted to be able to hear that. And one of the lines in the song is, "I want a house with a crowded table and a place by the fire for everyone. Let us take on the world while we're young and able, and bring us back together when the day is done." And I want to thank Will Flannery, one of the members of that Northfield Youth Choir, who I talked to him about the song after the show, and he let me know that this was a song from the High Women, and I was not familiar with it. So we're going to play just a snippet of that just to give you a sense of that. This beautiful song, I hope you discover it. The High Women are made up of an incredible group of singers, Brandi Carlile, Lori McKenna, Natalie Nicole Hemby. And here we go on Art Zany Radio. Here's Crowded Table.
I can be a mountain when you're feeling valley low. I can be a street light showing you the way home. But you can hold my hand when you need to let. I can be a mountain when you're feeling valley low. I can be a street light showing you the way home. 'Cause you can hold my hand when you need to let. For everyone, let us take
the High Women, Crowded Table. Just absolutely love this song. So thank you for introducing me to that, everybody who was at the State of the City and Northfield Youth Choirs. It's pretty incredible. And I think it says something, you know, it's like the description of a perfect place and maybe a content town, maybe a town with cows and colleges and community. And speaking of cows, I just couldn't resist sharing my own cow story in this segment today. I grew up with cows. Well, sort of. I was surrounded by black and white cows. My mother loved and still loves cows. Hi, Mom. I know you're listening. Thank you for being my number one fan. And when she started buying these cow souvenirs, and then she talked with all of her friends and family about this passion, of course, they all got into and started loving black and white cows. And we are blessed to have so many lovely and wonderful friends and families. And they all enjoyed sort of passing on things that they had found, these adorable and silly and weird cow stuff for my mom. And the collection at one point grew so it was hard for even the little kid visitors to count the number of cow things in the house. And we even have a cow and a baby cow that sits in Mary and Joseph's manger over Christmas in a local church. And this is the cow and her calf that now is going to be coming to live with us because my kids love this cow. And if I'm remembering correctly, and I didn't get a chance to check all these details, but I think we got this cow at the airport or maybe it was the state fair. I just can't quite remember exactly where it was or how we found it. But I do remember driving home with this cow. I know my mom wanted this cow, and my dad, I guess, generously said, okay, we'll do this. It is a giant cow, and I remember being stared at as we were carrying this cow, and then this cow was so big that it didn't fit in the back of our car, so my dad had to figure out how to use his bungee cords and tie the cow down and hold the hatchback of our car open, and my sister and I at the time were teenagers, and I remember being just mortified, dying of embarrassment as we drove the car down the freeway, this giant cow that was hanging out of the car, and everybody was looking at us as we drove down the freeway. Cows are amazing, and Northfield loves cows too. You know, I can remember when I came to Northfield for college, and I tried to explain to my new roommate from California why the town slogan was cows, colleges, and contentment. And somewhere there's a photograph of the two of us standing in front of that sign. I'd love to have that again now. But I wonder when she went back home what her family thought and what she told her friends. And later in life, when I moved here with my husband and we saw the sign, I remember wondering, where are the cows? And I think there's one farm maybe out near Dundas that had cows still when we moved here. But that legacy has persisted, and we are still known for our cows, colleges, and contentment. Also our cows, colleges, and community. But that's another story. Today, we're going to explore these famous cows in Northfield and how that story led to the creation of Parkland in Northfield. You will want to stick around for this one. So you pour yourself a cup of something and don't forget to add some cream. Today on Art Zany Radio, I want to welcome to the studio my guest today, Philip Spensley. Welcome again to Art Zany Radio.
Thank you, Paula.
It's so fun to have you. And we are here, you are from the Friends of Lashbrook Park. I know you do many things in this community, but today that's the one thing that you're going to be representing. And we're talking about this beautiful book called Speaking for the Land, A History of Northfield's Lashbrook Park. And Lashbrook Park is a natural, passive park for all people in all seasons to enjoy nature and refresh their souls. It's just a beautiful story. So first, I want to congratulate you at having your part in putting the book together. And I wonder if you will start maybe by just telling us a little bit about your connection to Lashbrook Park.
Well, I got involved back in around 2015, I think. And it was Erica Zweifel. I had been working with her when I was, as you are now, chair of the Arts and Culture Commission, and I was then chair of the Arts and Culture Commission, and she was on the council. And so mm-hmm. I certainly knew her. And she invited me to a meeting, since I lived near the park. I really didn't know much about it mm-hmm. at the time. And so I went to a meeting, and I met everybody and thought, you know, this is a pretty neat group and it's a wonderful park. So I kept going. And a couple of years later, the president of the Friends of Lashbrook Park decided that it was time for her to retire. She had been there for many, many years and had been involved in the creation of the park, Gloria Keister. And so I said, okay, you know, people ask, would you be willing to take over the presidency of the Friends? And I said, well, I'll do it for 3 years. How's that? I actually did it for four, but and that's how I got involved. And then when Gloria then retired and decided in her later years, she was in her 80s then, that she wanted to make sure that the history of this park and the story and the everything that had gone into creating this park and the struggle, indeed, mm-hmm. that it had been to bring it about, and struggles after that to keep it, to preserve it as what it was intended originally to be. She wanted to tell that story, and so she, you know, stood aside, and she was still active on the board as a past president, a new first time that position was created.
Mm-hmm.
and so I worked closely with her because I had to learn so much about the park. And she started to write, wanted to write the history. And it came eventually that it took her quite a number of years to do this. She spent a lot of time, but it was a huge passion for her. It had been the park in getting that park established and everything that the group went through to get that park, and then once it was there to save it, so she wanted to make sure that that story was told, its heritage was understood, and mm-hmm. that it remained the jewel that it is.
Right, and that's what this book details, and it's really... I was surprised to be so moved by the book, to be so engaged with the story and so inspired to think about what a difference people can make in their community and what it takes to make things happen. And yeah. So there's a lot to this story, but let's start at the beginning, because one of the things that surprised me and how beautifully written it is, and it starts with the history of the land, the geological history and yeah. the types of land formations that were in the area, and just goes, it's just so lovely.
It goes back to the Paleozoic age.
Yes, it does. And I guess,
elephants ranged and rhinoceros.
I know, and that surprised me, right? That you would, you don't think about that of this place.
That's right.
But it was something different before.
When it was under a sea to
yes,
begin with.
Right.
You know, and what this, how the land over eons, millions of years, came, and then she tells the story of the land as it became after the Ice Age, mm-hmm. the last 12,000 years ago. And then the population by the people then who came to be on the land. Mm-hmm. And then the settlers came. And how things gradually changed. And how Northfield, how it's a part of Northfield's establishment. And
yeah, it's really incredible.
It's an incredible story, that first chapter.
And I really appreciated the story of the Wapakute and how they... saw this place as just a treasure because of its convergence of, you know, the prairie and the forests, and just everything that they needed was here in a beautiful. I would love to be able to see it as it existed then, but it was a very moving part of the story. It's you know, really shows us the power of the natural environment and the, you know, this idyllic place and that history that is there. That I guess I don't think about that, and so this triggered things
it
for me.
It really is fascinating. I mean, the book is called Speaking for the Land, and it was not originally going to be called that. We had a number of readers. I gave the book to a number of people, and a couple of them were on the Parks Board, and Erica was on City Council. I asked her, and Alice Thomas, who had been long with here with the preservation and now with the depot, the resurrection of that, they reviewed the book, and it was Neil Lutsky, who teaches at St.
Carlton.
Sorry. And who, when he read the book, said, you know, this book really speaks for the land, and maybe you should give it a more punchy title than simply The History of Lashbrook Park. And I said, Neil, that's brilliant. Can I take what you said, and can we call it, you know? He said, go ahead. So it's, I am not to thank a word out to Neil for helping us actually come up with a title.
Big shout out. I'm a big fan of Neil Lutsky. He was my advisor when I was at school. So I just adore him.
I play ping pong with him regularly at the 50 North.
Yeah, I've seen him there. So I think that's just a, you know, a touch of, and what this book does so well is it takes us from that place to the whole story of this in the whole big world. It's just a small little postage stamp of a place, but it has so many stories that tell us about who we are, where we've come, what we've come through. And that part was really fascinating. I think one of the things that really hooked me was just this small section that was talking about, if you're driving in Northfield and you're on Greenvale Avenue, which comes off of Highway 3 and goes up towards St. Olaf, and then it turns into Cedar Avenue, that curve, it's a very distinct curve that's there. Often I've wondered, why is this curve so, it just doesn't seem safe sometimes, especially if it's a little slippery.
Yeah, slow down.
Slow down on that curve. And that it was built in 1869. And so I just was astounded by that fact, that how many wagon wheels and horses and vehicles have traversed that same space. And, you know, like I've been on that many, many times. But it helps us to see sort of how we move from that natural space to then, you know, being connected in Northfield, the settlers and everything developing, because they wanted a way to get to Farmington and eventually to the Twin Cities, which would have been like a 2-day trip at that time. But it's, you know, a pretty amazing thing. Just that one little piece of story helps me to see sort of that time expansion and creation. It's right after Carleton was founded, right before St. Olaf became another college in the town. And so it just really brought to life the history. What was it that you were grabbed by the history of this little place in Northfield, what is now Lashbrook Park?
Well, there are a number of things. One of the things that I learned, I mean, speaking for the land, I lived very close to Manitou Avenue, and I never knew the meaning of that. And I learned that from when I was editing this book for Gloria, putting it together for her, sadly after she had passed. That Manitou, of course, was the hill that St. Olaf is on, and it was a sacred place for the Wapakuta, and Manitou to them means God. And they revered this land. And I know that as through her involvement in it, Gloria revered this land too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that that is something still today, I feel, in Northfield.
Yeah, those
for
place,
us to be revered.
Exactly, and I think that's it was years ago when we were trying to think about, you know, I think we were in some meeting and trying to just brainstorm ideas of what makes this place notable or exceptional or what stands out. And I think it was Rob Hardy, our former poet laureate and incredible, you know, Northfield contributor to many things, who mentioned that it was the quiet places that help this place to stand out, that you have those places to go. And so I've always remembered that. And, you know, this is a story of one of those places. And some of that story comes to life in the book and talks about the 1903, it was Ulysses and Della Lashbrook came to Northfield. And they bought land from Farmer Schilling. And I was
who was the editor of the Northfield News at
right.
that point.
I know. He was a farmer and an editor. And he was also a really brilliant cow guy.
He was, and he got the Lashbrooks involved in Holsteins.
Exactly, because their land that they purchased, which is about 70 acres, which is north of St. Olaf College, for $7,000, it came with 20 Holsteins and 11 that were purebred and under contract to provide milk to St. Olaf. I thought, I loved that story. You know, like how things, you know, things happen that then affect the rest of the history, right?
Yes.
Just that purchase is amazing.
Yes.
And it's sort of the birth of that Holstein legacy in Northfield.
Yes. And the Lashbrooks were the ones who really created the Northfield becoming the Holstein capital of not only North America, but it turned out to be the world.
And I bet a lot of people don't know that.
No.
I mean, I knew of, I'd heard some stories, but to read how actually, what a big deal this was astounding.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's one point in the story where they said that they used to call the Northfield News the Holstein News just because so much of it. And by 1916, there were 300 Holstein herds in the area and over 4,000 Holstein cattle in our community, in the area surrounding it. It attracted cow buyers from all over.
All over the world.
Yes. I'm just trying to envision that. We don't think of this as a worldly place. Maybe sometimes there's some aspects of it, but it really was quite a big deal.
It was at the time.
Mm-hmm. And I love this story about because part of it was just that they were so aware of how to have healthy farms. You know, nutrition was important, and healthy environment for, you know, safe practices in the barns for the cows. That was part of what made them so successful.
Absolutely.
Was innovation. And one of Mr. Schilling's Holsteins became famous for having a champion cow, now get this, folks, that produced 29.43 pounds of butter in 1 week. Just stack up in your mind all the you know, 29 boxes of butter and think about that cow. That's a lot of milk.
Yes. And there was a time when Al Lashbrook, or was it? Yeah, had a cow that was, somebody wanted to buy it, and mm-hmm. they offered $15,000 for that one cow at that time. What that would be today, I can't imagine,
mm-hmm.
but it was a lot of money then.
And it was a young cow that he'd only paid.
It was only 2 years.
Like $700,
yes,
or I don't remember if that's exact amount,
yeah,
but it was a very small amount.
But it sired so many cows that were winners of all sorts of milk-producing and butter-producing competitions.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he did not sell it. And there was a huge article in the Northfield News, and people were astounded. Headlines, you know, this man would not sell a cow for this amount of money. And he said, no, it's more important to me to keep the cow than mm-hmm. to make the money.
Yeah, I mean, what a really amazing story. And so one thing that surprised me then, though, is so they were, you know, in the business of breeding, selling, you know, and competing with these Holsteins, is that then Northfield didn't turn itself into an industry that had ice cream parlors or, you know, butter cakes or buttered popcorn. Like, it was really fascinating to me that it was the cows that became the focus, not the products from the milk. It was right. So I could have been a different story had somebody ventured into town who started up an ice cream making business.
But when the Lashbrooks first came to Northfield, on the day they got married, a circus came to town.
I know. That is one of my favorite stories you want to tell. Well, we should remind listeners, this is Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. I'm Paula Granquist. We're here with Philip Spensley. We're talking about this incredible book, Speaking for the Land, A History of Northfield's Lashbrook Park. And we hinted that this story is coming. And if you don't know the story of the circus and the lions that came, I encourage you, Susan Vistendahl's book, Historic Happenings, has a lovely article that she wrote to refresh our memory. But I didn't realize there was a connection to the Lashbrook family.
Well, it turns out that when the circus came to town, they had lions. And when the lion keeper went into the cage, it was in front of people, 300 people.
Yes, that's what I think I read.
Watching the event, and as he went into the cage and closed the door caught on one of the tail of one of the lions, and the lion in turn attacked the keeper, and when that happened, the other lions attacked the keeper. And the keeper was killed.
It's just a horrible story, and I cannot imagine the trauma of being there.
So what was the connection with the Lashbrooks? They had to kill the lion that had done this. But then they wondered, what are they going to do with it? Where can we bury it? And it was went to the. They said, "Well, Al Lashbrook, he has land. He can bury that for you." And indeed, on the day after his wedding,
I don't believe this. This is unreal.
Here he is. He buried a lion, and he actually buried it on land. Was his field out there that now belongs to St. Olaf and is in the area of the Tostrud physical education facility.
I know. I just think about that. The idea that there's a lion skeleton somewhere. It was never marked. It wasn't, you know, a grave site that was visited. It's somewhere out there.
Yeah. I don't think they marked, you know, in those days.
No, it wouldn't.
Here lies the lion.
They probably didn't want to remember the lion that killed the man. It's a really fascinating story. And there's so many of those great, great little tidbits in this book that bring to life the family and the people that were on the land and kind of get us to connect in a different way to the space. And the Lashbrooks, Al was a son of Ulysses and Della. And, you know, I mean, he basically came back to the farm very shortly after he was married. And I thought it was really interesting. His bride, Edna, is probably one of the most fascinating characters in this story. She came from Anoka. And like you said, it was that same date in 1915 that they got married. And I think he was working in Washington, if I'm remembering correctly.
The state of Washington,
And doing farming things.
Yes, he was out there in an official government capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And after having graduated from both, I think it was St. Olaf and the University of Minnesota.
It might have been Carleton. I don't remember.
I'm not sure. Agricultural sciences.
Yes.
And he was sent out there on behalf of the government. And he was working out there, but came back to get married here.
Mm-hmm.
And then after burying the lion, went back out for a while and took Edna with him. And then they came back.
Right. It was about, I think it was a year or two after they were married that I believe it was his was it his mother or his father that passed away? And Edna stayed with
them.
Yes, to help, because the dairy farm is not an easy business. These cows were milked 3 times a day, 365 days a year.
Yes, early morning, a late afternoon, and midnight.
I was surprised.
I was too.
Like, that makes for a really tough day.
Yeah.
And they didn't, you know, they had some people on the land helping them, but it was a lot of individual family farms.
Well, what was interesting to me, too, was that they took in students from St. Olaf, who needed a place, and in return, who couldn't afford, in a way, to come to St. Olaf. So they earned their keep by helping the Lashbrooks with the milking of the cows and the feeding of the cows.
Whatever farm chores there were.
And they were treated like family members, lived with the Lashbrooks.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I remember that they said something about having 10 rooms. And so that's a lot of people. That was a crowded table, to reference back to the...
Yes, indeed.
And then Edna did a lot of... I mean, she just became a master of... you know, homemaking, and you know, just think about planning all of those meals for all of those people, and most of the things she was using were what was found on the land,
right?
Whether it was berries or crops or animals, and so there, it's just a constant the workflow.
Well, she graduated also with a degree, at that time was unique in many ways for a woman in home economics. So
yes.
She was well capable of doing all that she did, but what she did was astounding.
Yeah, and so her story just absolutely, you know, inspired me. There's a recipe in here for her sugar cake, probably worth the, you know, the book, because it's a, I had never heard of that kind of, and it was apparently something that they would, if you had people, you know, stop by and you didn't have anything prepared, you could whip this up real quick.
It seemed it would be a pretty quick thing to whip up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that's a little fun thing that's in the book.
But it had cream in it.
Yeah, of course it did. Of course.
From the farm.
Which probably it will never get to taste like it would if you just got the cream right off of the milk. And so she, you know, managed that farm. And there was one story in there that I particularly loved about her. She was a representative of the American Farm Bureau Federation and was selected to go to a meeting in California. So I'm thinking this is probably, I don't have the date with me here, 20s. Maybe 30s. I don't recall. But what an adventure for her to be away from chores and kids.
Yeah, as it says in the book.
I mean, yeah, but it brings me to the story of the railroad and how important that was to this town as well. And for her to travel and have that experience of, you know, just the cars and the dining and the service that she was presented with, it was just great. And so the way, again, it's the writing of Gloria in this that and your editing. I assume you were shaping those stories.
Yes. Well, I'll just back up a minute. I want to say more about Edna, but yes, in terms of when. Gloria was very tired at the end, toward the end of her life. And I wanted to make sure that what she had been working on was preserved.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over to her house and I took, with her permission, from her computer the various aspects of things that she had been writing, and it was this here, this there, you know, we had to go searching for everything that was somewhere on her computer, and I put them all together on a thumb drive.
Mm.
And she also gave me a box of clippings and documents, which we have many of these in the book.
Yeah, they add a lot of flavor and color and voices to the story.
Right, and so we had those. And so what I did immediately when I got that thumb drive, I duplicated it and shared that with the rest of the members of the board of the Friends of Lashbrook Park to make sure that if anything happened to me, or I lost my thumb drive, or it got wrecked or something, we would still have it.
Yeah, you didn't want to lose this story.
Did not want to lose the history. And we didn't know completely yet what the story was, but we knew that she had been working on it. And so I gave this also, and we had a new member of our board at that point, Craig Rice from St. Olaf, who was in IT. And he took all what I had collected and put it in an order so that it had a shape.
Mm.
And it was from that then, and he gave that to Norm Watt, who used to teach German at St. Olaf, and who went through and made some edits, and then it came to me. And I looked it over and thought that, okay, now we need to put it in a historical rather than a series of, you know, episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Put it together as a whole. And so into a chronology. And I also had other people working with me. Laurie Olson, who took over the presidency of the Friends of Lashbrook Park from me, she was at that time still working for Wells Fargo and traveling the country, so she didn't have time, though she had been on the board.
Mm-hmm.
She's a Lashbrook. And she knew a lot about the family, of course, and so we went through and made sure that the details of the family were, mm-hmm. as it say, tweaked and made sure that the story indeed was fully correct there. She provided a lot of help to me in that sense. And this was during the pandemic. Of course, Gloria died during the pandemic. Mm. And so it was a way for me also to get through that. And it was, a labor of love for Gloria to write this, as Kathy Osterman noted, the former executive director of the Historical Society.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of our initial readers. I wanted to make sure that people who knew Northfield and were involved, people on the Parks Board, people on council, would read the book. And they did, and they gave me responses. And
yeah, and we're so lucky to have it now.
We are. And so anyway, back to Edna.
Okay.
Okay, I did a lot of work on it, but it's Gloria's story because she was the one that did the research. She was the one who lived it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I didn't live it, but I live it now through her. Mm-hmm. And I did in bringing this book to be published.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to give a shout out to Rob Chanelec and his people at By All Means Graphics.
Woohoo, Rob!
they were so helpful in again bringing this to fruition.
Yeah, and we have only touched on some of those stories.
Yes.
And I think I'm looking at the clock thinking, oh my goodness, we haven't even gotten to the creation of Lashbrook Park, so we need
okay,
to
yes.
fast forward. But one of the things that it showed me was that no matter how much we want to keep things the same, things always change.
Oh, they do.
And if we want to hold on to something, we need to show up where it matters. And the Lashbrook Park wasn't something that the family was thinking about.
They never knew.
Right. And that might be surprising to people. It was that the land was someone offered to, had a piece of the land and was going to put it up for sale.
Yes, actually, the Lashbrooks, when they retired, Edna and Al retired, sold the land.
That's right, yes.
And the person who bought it then was also going to sell the land. And this patch of 11 and point something acres at the time, there's more now, because of the addition of the woods, which mm-hmm. came later, thanks to Dixon Bond.
Yes, another great hero
another
in Northfield's
great
history.
Hero in Northfield's history. Yeah, who was instrumental, by the way, you are the current chair of the Arts and Culture Commission. he was instrumental on the council of getting that created.
Yes, I believe that he was passionate about the arts.
He
and
was
a big supporter. So
yeah. Anyway, Dixon has much to recommend him. I miss him.
Yes.
So when
that came up for sale,
it came up for sale, it was what do we do with it? And there was a company, a group of people who wanted to build a lot of houses on it, and the people who lived in the neighborhood thought, well, we want to preserve this for a park. And that struggle became a one that went on for years, many years.
Decades, I think.
Yeah. And even after that was won, and it was it's quite a startling story to follow that. And it was once it was established, then people wanted to turn that passive park. It was created, and the city didn't pay much for that park. This was a grant that was achieved from the state of Minnesota's Business Bureau,
mm-hmm.
because it was recognized by them that communities that have parks and amenities like that attract business more than housing.
Mm-hmm. And that having that parkland pays back more than not having it.
Absolutely. It's more of value to, although it doesn't raise tax money, it's still more of value to the community,
mm-hmm.
than something you'd put on there that would raise your taxes, because it's constantly drawing more people here and more business. And it is a gem in the community. Anyway, once it was established, people then wanted to do other things with it.
Well, yeah, let's back up, because I think one thing that's really fascinating about this story is just those neighbors who said, wait, I'm not sure I want that here. And they had never planned on being a part of an organization. They'd never thought about, you know, this as a decades-long project.
Yeah.
There's so much, and what's documented so well in here is the back and forth. And what I loved about that was that there's information about, you know, city meetings. There's information. I especially loved like the letters to the editor that were in the Northfield News. And it feels like the discourse was, I really enjoyed that thoughtfulness of each, you know, the different opinions, different sides.
Right.
But it seemed like a time when people would invest in creating a response that was, you know, filled with details and references and well thought out. And it was a slow dialogue, because it takes, you know, a week for the paper to come out, or, you know, 2 or 3 weeks or a month between each meeting. And I appreciated that a lot, that space between those times when people could organize and strategize.
Yes. Gloria has done a wonderful job, mm-hmm. I have to say, in documenting that with the newspaper clippings and also her own involvement in it and the memory of that involvement.
Right.
And the telling of that story. And that chapter is, again, another fabulous chapter in civics.
Yes, and that is something I think we could all take a lesson from, and how important that was to shaping what became. And so I don't know if we're going to get into all of the details of it, but it wasn't, some of this was started, I think it was, wasn't it the 70s?
In the 80s,
that's
then,
right.
And it went through the 90s, and then it was finally in 1996.
That 93, wasn't that when the city made the first?
Yes, but then the money, it took time to get the money to purchase the land.
So the story continued.
The story continued, and it was, I think, 1996 when finally the grant was accepted, and we got $86,000. St. Olaf had said that they would give $50,000, and the city had said they would give $50,000, and the Friends had said they would raise $50,000, and so it was going to be, that was the price of the land, $150,000. When the $86,000 came in, St. Olaf then gave 25, and the mm-hmm. city was happy to only give 25, and the residents raised the rest.
And yeah, there, remind me of the name of the woman who did the grant work, because she did. Was that Kathy Ann?
That was Kathy Ann. Brown.
Oh my goodness! And her writings in here are just as a proponent of that space and the research she did to track down. Things way back in the history of Northfield really astounding.
Her letters in here and her research that Gloria does bring to light is that also is absolutely fascinating.
I agree.
It's a joy to actually read. It's so well written.
Exactly. And so it's just so many, it's the people that showed up and the people that, you know, had passion and organized and made things happen.
Some of those people are still with us today in the community. And I want to give a shout out to these people. If you're listening, folks, Noreen Lennox and Fred Stanley and Laurie, of course, Olson. Ken Curtin, who came on later on and has done so much for that park. Brianna Wheeler has been involved recently. We've done flowers, reseeded flowers in the park to keep it fresh.
Right, because that goes back to that point that when you want things to stay the same, and this group, I think, thought once they got the land and they got it purchased and that it would be the end of the story.
Right.
And it is not to this day.
It's to this day. I mean, Diane Angel with her students at St. Olaf, she's in biology, was involved. There have been so many people in the community who have given to this park.
Mm-hmm.
And
let's talk about the naming of the park. I think that was a good story, too, because people may not know, like we mentioned, it was not something that the Lashbrook family had a part in
at
all.
They had no clue.
Yes.
I mean, it was named long after they had sold it.
Mm-hmm.
On what basis do we name a park? And there were a number of names that were floated. And it was settled, and I think it was Dixon who was involved again in that it was suggested at one of the city council meetings that because of what the Lashbrooks had owned this land at one point, but what they had given to the community, cows, colleges, and contentment of community, and the role that they had played in the town needed to be preserved.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was unanimous decision by the council that it be named Lashbrook Park.
And I'm so glad it is. So then I could learn about their family and their story could be told. And you know, there's so many threads in here that connect so many dots, I think, to not only the history, but, the nature itself, getting back to that beginning of the environmental issues and just the way things happen, the way you make community. And I was impressed with the, I think it was the comprehensive plan that played a role in, and people may be thinking about that because we're now working on the 2045 comprehensive plan.
Yes.
And this is an example of why that's so important.
It absolutely is. And it was in part of a comprehensive plan way back that said, hey, we the city values our natural resources,
mm-hmm.
and we need to make sure that the environment is still a part of our lives. And it was on that basis that Kathy Ann argued, as well as a number of other issues, for the city to say, you know, this is a way. This land is prairie.
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time, we were prairie. This land also is woodland. and the oak savanna. And that oak savanna stretched so much of this area. We have little remnants left.
Yeah, I mean, the whole state from Mankato to, I forget the name, the North Town, but it was, that was an entire swath of land.
It was huge. And we have just now, I think, very few. We have the woods.
Haugen?
We have the Hauberg woods.
Hauberg, excuse me.
We have that. We have Lashbrook woods. And then we have the Great Woods.
Big woods,
The big woods. That's it. Mm-hmm. So we're keeping that also.
And people might also be fascinated to know that, and I don't think I have the reference here, but to the name of the case, but there was a famous Minnesota Supreme Court case that played a role in the development of this this park. And that was, for those of you who like to think about the law, there's a reference to it. And
in Headley versus the city of Northfield. That once a park is dedicated as a park for what it's dedicated to, it cannot be changed.
Which was, and has been used many times
over. It has been used several times since the establishment of the park to keep it.
And in other parks, in other places.
Other parks also, not only in Minnesota, but across the country.
These are pieces of the history that I had no idea.
Right out of Northfield.
And there's, I mean, we're just, but like I said, there's a lot more in here as well. I think we've touched on this briefly, and I think I want to talk just about how valuable that space is. And there's a letter to the editor of the Northfield News from Fred Stanley in there that talks about this. It was a new idea, and I think it was I guess I don't remember the date it was published. Must have been... I don't remember if it was after the archery battle.
Yes.
It was. Okay. And where he talked about this new idea of environmental psychology.
Yeah.
It's about the power of nature and how it can be healing and essential to managing our mental health. And I think about our experiences during the pandemic and how I think a lot of people used spaces, parks like that, to sort of keep themselves grounded and, allowed themselves to take a deep breath and connected to nature. And that's a letter worth reading as well that's in here. I think page 77 is what I have noted for when his letter was in the book. Again, the book is Speaking for the Land, A History of Northfield's Lashbrook Park, but it's just exquisite in how it ties all of these components of what makes community and between the people and the laws and the meetings and the newspapers and all of it. It's just a lovely example of that.
And to keep the land, we need to keep preserving it.
Right. It's an active process.
It's an active process. And there are people dedicated to it now. And hopefully in the generations to come, people will step forward. And there is an organization called the Friends of Lashbrook Park. May I just make
I was going to say, we need to do that. We need to tell them where they can get the book, and then if they want to help Lashbrook Park, what they can do.
Yes. The book at the moment is available at Paper Petalum. Petalina now it is.
Yes.
and also at the Historical Society. And the way to... help support the park. Membership is only $10 a year. Can you believe that?
That's a very good deal.
it was established at that when the Friends began, and it hasn't changed since. We have members from all across the country, actually. But certainly you may join, and we are a part of the the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota, and you can go to the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota on your website, and you can donate right on the website, $10 or more.
Yeah, of course. The entry fee. You can go higher.
Right, to the Friends of Lashbrook Park to help maintain it.
Right, because there Buckthorn is an issue that you're dealing with.
Ken Curtin took 3 years of his retirement to all summer long, years.
What a battle.
Took out all the buckthorn that was growing there. It still needs to be maintained, but I want to give a big shout out to him for that.
Right, and also just like you mentioned, there's new plantings coming up because prairie, to establish this as prairie, takes quite a bit of time
it
to
does.
Ensure that those plants that you want to keep are and native plants are able to flourish.
Yes, so we just got a grant recently to do that. Lori Olson, again, Lashbrook, and our current president of the Friends, and Brianna Wheeler, of course, who's involved with Riverbend, nature play, was involved also in securing that grant and seeing that people, volunteers, seated. And so we look forward continually to the refreshment of and maintenance of this park. But it is a huge, huge job. And I also want to thank the city.
Yes.
For its role in maintaining this park, the trails that are mowed through the prairie, the burning that needs to be done of the prairie every so many years, so vital, and the things that we're looking forward still to doing in that park. There are some trails through the woods. We began to do that. The Lashbrook family had a reunion here a number of years ago, and they set to work and started that process. They were eager to do that. It still needs to be upkept and maintained. And so anybody out there who is interested in nature and preserving this bit of wonderful heritage of Northfield, I invite you to join the Friends of Lashbrook Park.
And I've got a connection on our website, kymnradio.net. The tinyurl.com is NFLD Lashbrook Park, and you can find out all those details. Folks, thank you for listening. We've only touched on the surface, but I hope you're excited to go out in nature, enjoy one of our parks in Northfield or wherever you are. And of course, in the meantime, till next time, please enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.
Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org. Or call 507-645-8877.
Know what I get to go see? I get to go see Dora and Diego. My dad said. And I get to go on the Diego ride. People call it the Diego Rescue Rider ride. It goes up and down and up and down.